Hello and welcome to the Homesism Podcast. My name is Phil. Joining me as usual, I've got Rohan. Hey, Rohan, how are you doing?
Hey, good. How are you?
Yeah, very good. Thank you. As usual, this episode of the Homesism Podcast is sponsored by Homesism Cloud by Nabucasa. Easily access your local home assistant instance remotely for a small monthly fee that supports the home assistant, ESP Home, ZWFJS, and a whole bunch of other projects. Configuration is done via the user interface, so there's no fiddling with router settings, SSL certificates, or any YAML. And today's episode is also sponsored by ExpressVPN. Get ready for some Black Friday and Cyber Monday deals. We'll talk about that a bit more coming up. All right, Rohan, 2024.11 is here.
It is. November.
So, pleased to see this one. I think it's finally here. Sections, we've been talking about, I feel as though, like, all year. I guess this was the year of the dashboard,
yeah.
Maybe. So, sections, the new sections layout, or the sections types of dashboards, are now marked as stable, and they are officially here to stay. And as part of that new rollout of sections being official, there is now the ability to convert old dashboards. So old, even if you're coming all the way from when they were called Lovelace still, you can now convert them into the section layout, which will then allow you to have them automatically move around, give you all of the fancy new drag and drop, resizing, yeah, all the fun stuff that's been coming out this year. Yeah, that's fantastic to see. And great to see they got it done in like this is the goal, right? Make dashboards and everything look nicer, and they did it in the year.
Yeah, it was pretty good actually, because I know when they showed us, not us, they it was public, right? They showed the roadmap, and they wanted to say, you know, we have a focus on dashboards this year. We want to improve that user interface and the user experience there. They did it within calendar year, right? It's November, and they're pretty much like, hey, this is official. Not to say that they're done and they're not going to improve it or do anything else to it. But now it's more enhancements rather than actual core functionality, right? So that, I think, is a pretty cool way to look at it. And it's a pretty cool feat that they actually got that into GA that quickly, right? Exactly. Yeah. And if you weren't familiar, it's been there for a little bit, right? But it was in a public beta, right? So it's in a preview. So in the sense that it could change, you know, if they feel like they could pull it, they can do whatever, right? It's basically saying like, hey, we're trying this out. We're trying to get it to a stable state. We have intention of doing this. Let's see how it goes, kind of thing, right? A little more stable than that. I mean, typically I don't see them pulling out stuff too much, but there has been a couple of things where, you know, there is chance that it could vastly change, right? They might just change the whole thing and say, okay, everything you did now is now different. But once it gets to a stable state, then you know, you pretty much know that it's going to be, if that does happen, it's going to happen over time, and it's going to be slight changes or slight bumps to a specific direction, rather than just being like, hey, we're going to do this all at once, unless something drastic kind of happens. So that's a pretty good beat there.
Yeah, definitely.
Something else coming too, low latency cameras. So now cameras will try to use WebRTC when possible. So because those are peer-to-peer, and that way it's the most kind of direct path, right? So it's a little faster typically in that way. So for example, my home assistant might be connecting directly to my doorbell or camera or what have you, and pulling the video via WebRTC, connecting directly to there. Sometimes it's not possible, so it might need to get relayed by an external server. And if you're a Home Assistant Cloud subscriber, that's where Home Assistant Cloud comes in, right? So leverage service used by Nabucasa and say, hey, you know what? I can actually proxy that through there.
It's interesting, like, I've only just got like a very cheap RTSP camera running through the labs feature of my Unify gateway. So very new, like very first camera that I would get, you know, very close to being integrated into Home Assistant this way. I do wonder, like, if you've got a local camera, how does the Nabucasa, like, what is I can see that you don't want the your local home visit instance, you know, server having to process those images and then clogging up that server, right? Because then you walk into a room and the lights don't turn on because you're trying to stream your video, local video. Does that mean that, you know, my local camera feed is then going out to the cloud and then back down to be processed?
I think it depends on the integration. So we can get somebody from NABU to confirm this, but I believe the way I would understand it is, there's two pieces of this, right? If I'm on the road and I'm trying to stream my camera, that would get fed via...
Of course, remote access. That makes sense. Yes. Yes.
Exactly. So your device proxies it, right? Because it's behind my firewall, behind whatever. And essentially what happens is in my case, my Home Assistant Yellow punches out a secure tunnel up to NABU Casa. And then NABU Casa would say, hey, here, Rohan's phone, where I'm out at the grocery store, just send it through, run it through me, and I will securely kind of pass it through back and forth, right? It's just a proxy, so it doesn't actually, they don't actually do anything with it. They're just saying, hey, outside world, run through this little tunnel to go to the inside world. That doesn't make you comfortable. You don't have to do that. There's a ton of other options where you can self-host it. You can punch a hole in your firewall again, and you know, kind of like our initial statement says, you know, that means you do have to fiddle with router settings, you do have to fiddle with certificates and stuff like that, potentially, if that's something you want to do. There's also other options like running Cloudflare Tunnel and doing a bunch of those things, right? So depending on what you're doing, there's a lot of options. I like Home Assistant Cloud just because, again, just easy for me to set up. I do have a setup where I can run it through securely, but it's, you know, it's I could have it so that it's going through five different stages of stuff, or I could just kick it up to NABU Casa and have them deal with it, right? So that's kind of the idea there. The other side of it is like a potentially a cloud to cloud kind of connection, right? So if you have something that's running a camera that runs in the cloud, and it fires things like, again, like webhooks or something like that, depending on what the platform is and how it works and so on and so forth, that could get proxied through NABU Casa as well. Usually not, but it could. I'm not sure about how it works with WebRTC or if they actually have, or sorry, not with WebRTC, with like RTSP or some other protocols like that. I don't think NABU would be handling those connections, just because that would come in through that probably would come directly to your device, right?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah,
very cool. Well, there you go. I've learned something today. Thank you for the explanation.
And again, this is Rohan's explanation of that, right? It might not be 100% accurate. I'm pretty sure it is, but again, we'll. You know, I know Frank listens to this, so Frank, if you want to leave a comment on YouTube or something like that for folks to look at, that would be awesome.
All right. Blueprints. So if you're not familiar with Blueprints, are a way for the community to share their automations and allow you to then download that blueprint. You can then fill out your own entities and have that automation or script do the thing. Lots of cool blueprints. I was just in there the other day trying to look for some for this new feature. And yeah, I was just amazed at cool little things, right? Like you've got like a Philips Hue dimmer remote. There's people that have created a blueprint that allows you to map all the buttons and, you know, just you can do it all through the UI. Anyway, this release, 2024.11, brings in the ability for templates to have blueprints. Now, I am a very big fan of templates. Templates use the Jinja/Home Assistant templating language underneath the hood. And you can do some very, very cool stuff. I use templates to do some, like, is this group state on while this person is home? Some Bayesian sensors. There's a whole bunch of stuff that you can do. What's cool now is that because there's a lot of people that are more smarter than me and will do some more crazy stuff with templates. People can now create blueprints for those template entities and publish them up into the Home Assistant forums, and then you can download them. So I am very keen to see what the community comes up with in terms of these template entities, and I think that's a great addition for blueprints as well. Very good use case.
Home Assistant supervisor logs are also now getting, they're actually live now. So you don't have to hit refresh every time. They're actually just streaming directly into the UI. So that's a nice, nice little change sheet. It's usually you don't want to refresh as you're looking for something.
Yeah, particularly when you're trying to debug something, right? Like, okay, go off, fire this device. Yep, hit the refresh button. Nope. Now I've got to go through like all the other logs that I don't care about.
Yeah.
All right. Fibaro, the Fibaro integration now has power sensors when using the Fibaro integration. So that's for the home center or the UB home hub. That's a great addition there.
Nice. Husqvarna Automower. So there's new work area sensors that lets you see the progress percent and the last time a specific area was mowed. That's kind of cool.
That's cool. Yeah, so you've got like a front yard. It will say, all right, the front yard has been, you know, done 50% of the time and it was done, you know, 2 days ago, whereas the backyard was.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very cool. All right, Spotify. So big updates to Spotify this release. I'll try and break it down, but there is a whole bunch of new sensors that have been added to the Spotify integration, which I can only imagine you're going to be able to pump into AI and do some magic with, but there is, so I'll just rattle off some of these cool sensors. So song acousticness will indicate how much the sound is free from electronic modification. So if the sensor is 100%, it means it hasn't been modified at all. There's the danceability score of a song. So it describes how suitable a track is for dancing based on a combination of elements. The song energy in percent will give you a measurement of the intensity and activity of a song. So typically an energetic song would be fast, loud, noisy. Whereas a death metal might have high energy. So that's cool. The instrumentalness of a song, so how much vocals the song contains, the key of the song, the liveness, so if there's an audience present in the recording, the mode or the modality, major, minor of a song, the speechiness, the how much of the spoken words are in a song, and the variance of a song, so
valence.
Oh, valence, sorry. Yes, I just completely misread that. The song Valence, yes, in percent. So how much it sounds more positive, happy, euphoric, and a low valence would be more like negative, sad, depressed.
That's a lot of made-up words.
So first
our show notes right now, half of them are just showing wrong, right? Yeah. Like incorrect spelling or something, like acousticness, instrumentalness.
I love that there is this data. I have like one. Also, I love that Spotify provides this data. It's to their API, and that in turn we can get that into Home Assistant. And now they're just exposed as sensors. I would love to know what people are going to do with this data. Are they just going to shove it off to AI and build their own? Maybe like a, you know how Spotify does your Spotify Wrapped every year? Like it would give you a breakdown of what you've been listening to. Mine has been broken for years because I've have kids now and it's always like you watch you listen just to the Wiggles, right? and you don't like anything else but the Wiggles now.
That's right.
But like I'd be interested to see like are people kind of trying to use this data to make their own Spotify Wrapped, or are they maybe going to try and maybe automate playlists, you know, find playlists that have that, you know, high liveliness or danceability. And if a song has been chosen by Spotify Radio, for example, and it has, you know, this sort of criteria, are they just going to automate putting that into a playlist for future, you know, rotation?
I wonder if you could also do like, hey, like I could use a boost right now, right? And
yeah,
you know, it finds a playlist, goes through that playlist and says, okay, you know what? I'm going to pick these songs. Like again, and this might be you run it through like a GPT of some kind, a ChatGPT or Gemini or something like that. And it says, okay, you know what? Here is all of the, I don't know, like the danceability or the valence to make it, you know, make sure these are like happier, right? Or something like that, right? And come up with a playlist that way. That might be kind of cool. I don't know. I feel like this is really cool, and I have absolutely no use for it. but I still think it's super cool, right? It's
as someone that doesn't listen to Taylor Swift, I want to know, because from purely as an outside person only, right, the songs are generally about breakups and stuff, but they're energetic, right? So does that mean that when it comes to like danceability or valence, right, like is it a happy song? Like, does it come up as a happy mood because you can dance to it and it's jivey?
Well, it might still be high valence, right? Because it sounds happy, even though the words might not be.
Yeah. So I'd be, yeah, just this data existing, I didn't know was possible. But yeah, with a Pandora's box, it could open.
This is interesting. So again, tangent here. So Spotify is just starting to raise. So right now I have a family plan, right? And so myself, my wife has one. I think my parents have one, whatever. I'm at the point where they keep raising their prices, and it's going to be like, what is it, like 22 or 20 something, some of that, right? Bucks Canadian a month. And I'm like, that's a lot, right? I don't know. And I'm a part of me is like, do I start canceling Spotify? And I used to have YouTube Premium, which I enjoyed because I do watch a lot of YouTube, which comes with YouTube Music, but YouTube Music kind of isn't, it's not Spotify, right? And there's the, you know, like the Amazon Echoes don't support YouTube Music today, which I didn't know. I assumed it would have, but it doesn't. And that kind of thing. And again, we listen to a lot through our Amazon Echoes, right? But I also have a Prime membership, and I was like, I don't really care for the Amazon Music. It's, I don't know. It just feels like it's kind of stupid.
I don't know about you. I always find, like, even Prime TV, right? Like, I just feel as though it's...
Yeah.
Do you have to... Like, have you got a brand, John West? We have a brand down here in Australia, at least. It's like a tuna brand. It's John West, right? And I remember growing up as a kid, the ad was always, this is the tuna that John West rejected, right? And it would be like, to say that they always got the premium stuff. I always felt as though like any TV show or movie that's on Amazon Prime is just whatever Netflix or HBO or whoever else has just rejected and has just landed on Prime. Right? No one else has got it.
I like shows on Prime. I just don't watch them on Prime. Right, like it's my wife and I just started watching the second season of Special Ops Lioness, and I want to say that's a Prime show. I'm not sure if that's so season two of it just came out. Oh, it's Paramount Plus. Okay, yeah, I don't
right
do that. I don't know. Like it's again, like even like I growing up, I was a big Top Gear fan, and a lot of their new shows on all of the new shows on Prime, right? They have they have exclusivity there. And even Jeremy Clarkson has this like Clarkson's Farm show and stuff, which I enjoy. It's a good background, like dumb show to have on the background as you're like, I don't know, cleaning your dishes or something. But I hate Prime and I don't know why.
It's got some cool features.
That too, right? And it's like, but you know what? I downgraded my Netflix plan. It's painful, but I actually get a lot less ads on Netflix than I thought I would, which is interesting. And then I still get some, but it's not annoying. Mm-hmm. And then YouTube is just, so I'm like, a part of me is like, okay, if I go YouTube Premium, then I will get music and I'll get thing, but and obviously ad free YouTube, but it's also like, I don't know. Then I lose the ability to play stuff on my Amazon Echoes, right? Maybe I keep Spotify free for that. I don't know.
You can't not use Spotify free for Echoes.
Use Spotify free, right? Yeah. I don't know. So I'm kind of stuck. I'd love to know what people are doing. A part of me is like, hey. I know one of the suggestions is going to be just download your music, right? But I actually discover a lot of new music on Spotify, which I really like.
Yes, yeah.
Doing and YouTube seems to have. I've been playing with YouTube Music the last few days. It seems to have kind of similar facilities to discover new music and stuff like that. Maybe not as well tuned to my liking because I've started using it for, I don't know, like 4 days as opposed to years.
Yep.
But I don't know. I'd love to know people's thoughts.
I would say check out SoundCloud. So I have the Echoes around our house, and they're all linked to. So we have a family plan too, but the voice control is linked to my personal Spotify, right? And to switch accounts between on the Echo device to switch to someone else's Spotify, like, it's painful, right? Like, especially when you've got kids you're trying to get to sleep, right? Like, and we're also integrated with Sonos, so it's not as, yeah, it's like a half-baked Alexa integration. Ooh, I just said her name. My apologies. For what I've found is that I can, like, if we've got one kid asleep listening to Spotify and the other kid wants, for example, I mentioned before, the Wiggles, a lot of music from the Wiggles is uploaded to SoundCloud. So then I can get on my phone through the Sonos app and say, hey, and find the Wiggles song that is from the same album. I think it's even uploaded by the Wiggles to SoundCloud, and play it through the Sonos speakers from SoundCloud, which then doesn't cut out the other room listening to Spotify's version of that Wiggles song.
Yeah.
So, yeah, there is like a whole bunch of music on SoundCloud uploaded by both the artists, probably not uploaded by the artists, bit of a gray area there. I'm into electronic music, so there's a lot of DJs that put their mixes up, radio shows. Yeah, so I would say check out SoundCloud, and I don't pay for SoundCloud, and it's available on my Sonos speakers.
Interesting. Okay. I'll
whereas opposed to Spotify and Sonos and, you know, the Amazon Echoes, you would need to have the premium subscription to use
that. Yeah. The only time I ever use SoundCloud is if someone is like, hey, like, oh, listen to this new artist that I found on right? And like, and which hasn't happened in years, right? Where it's like, I don't remember the last time I've actually gone on SoundCloud. It might be like 5 years, maybe.
And I don't think it's changed.
I'll give it a shot. That's a great tip. Anybody else has any tips, throw it in the comments. I would love to know, or shoot us an email, because this is something I'm trying to do to save a little bit of money at least every month.
Go back to CDs, although buying one CD would probably cost you a subscription.
I've been like searching and stuff. I've found like a couple of services I didn't even know existed, but they also integrate into Music Assistant, which is cool. But they're like super premium quality. I'm like, I love music. I don't have the ears for being an audiophile. Yeah. I think maybe I do, but I don't know. Like, can I tell the difference between really, really high quality audio and high quality audio? Maybe. I haven't actually ever done the comparison to myself, but probably a good thing. It's usually cheaper to go with crappier quality. And if I can't hear the difference, though,
I think that's it, right?
Yeah. But I do love music. I enjoy music. I listen to it all the time. So it's this, you know, SoundCloud's almost, I don't know, an investment in insanity, if you want to call it that, right? And it's we'll see. Anyways, that was my slight
nice little tangent on music services.
That's right.
Don't go anywhere, we'll be back with 2024.11 straight after this. Going online unprotected is like leaving your door unlocked when you leave your house. Maybe you trust some of your neighbors, but what about the creepy guy down the end of the street? What about the delivery drivers or any just random strangers walking past? Do you trust all of them? With ExpressVPN, you can stay safe online without having to trust any random strangers. Every time you connect to an unencrypted network, you know, they're in cafes, hotels, airports, or even some random IoT network you might have, your online data is not secure. Any hacker on the same network you gain access to can steal your personal data, including passwords, bank details, and credit cards. And this isn't technical stuff. Anyone, even a 12-year-old, could probably do it. Your data is valuable, and hackers have been known to make up to $1,000 per person by selling personal information on the dark web. ExpressVPN stops hackers from stealing your data by creating a secure, encrypted tunnel between your device and the internet. ExpressVPN is super secure. It would take a hacker with a supercomputer over a billion years to get past ExpressVPN's encryption. It works on all devices from phones, laptops, and more. I've used it on Docker containers, so you can stay secure on the go. I love ExpressVPN for the pure fact that I know my data is safe wherever I'm going. And I also love it from a technical perspective where I can teleport into other regions where I need to do website testing or just to see what is available on Netflix in another country. Right now, you can take advantage of ExpressVPN's Black Friday and Cyber Monday offers to get the absolute best VPN deal you'll find all year. Use our special link, expressvpn.com/homeassistant, to get 4 extra months with the 12-month plan or 6 months with the 24-month plan totally free. That's expressvpn.com/homeassistant to get an extra 4 or even 6 months of ExpressVPN for free.
My wife and I have been trying to eat healthy and on a budget. And with the holiday season just around the corner, just like you, we're looking for ways to spend and stress less. HelloFresh makes mealtime hassle-free with delicious, home-delivered, and chef-crafted recipes that come together quick and is less expensive than takeout. You can customize recipes so each meal is just the way you like it. There are options available to trade or upgrade proteins and swap out the side dishes. I'm looking forward to my HelloFresh box so I can start trying new, well-balanced meals instead of us wondering what's for dinner and eating something unhealthy. With the guided recipes, it also helps me start dinner early to better help out my family. Get 10 free meals at HelloFresh.com/freehomeassistant. Applied across 7 boxes, new subscribers only, and varies by plan. That's 10 free HelloFresh meals. Just go to HelloFresh.com/freehomeassistant. Okay, one last thing from a new feature perspective as well. The Meter Pro for SwitchBot is now supported. And then also SwitchBot Cloud now gets support for locks. So there you go.
Very nice. Locks. All right, some new integrations landing in 2024.11. The Husqvarna Auto Motor BLE is now supported. So BLE obviously being Bluetooth Low Energy. The integration is based on the Automower BLE library, which is an unofficial reverse engineered Husqvarna Automower Connect BLE library. So first of all, I don't like that it's unofficial, as reverse engineered means firmware update could come out and stops working, but really love that it is BLE and local controlled. So this means cloud goes down or you're in a remote property with no internet, you can use this with the Bluetooth. And I think it would work really well with like the BLE proxies, right? From like just get an ESP device, chuck ESP home on it, and away you go.
Yeah, stick one maybe outside in an enclosure or something like that, and you have an outdoor one now. So yeah,
exactly. So yeah, I'm gonna definitely like a few years time when my kids are old enough and I don't have to worry about things being chewed up in the lawn, and I come to looking at a robot lawnmower, like stuff like this is appealing, right? Particularly the local no cloud control.
Palazzetti. So you can now control Palazzetti stoves, which is not like a gas stove. It's an actual it's gas, but it's not, or I think pellet stoves actually, but it is not a cooking stove. It is a heating stove, right? So it's to heat your room. So you can control Palazzetti stoves using a local connection. The integration offers a climate entity that allows you to read the room temperature, start and stop the stove, and set the target temperature and the fan speed. So there you go. It's nice for if you have like a cabin up north or something.
I'm glad we clarified the stove, because I think we were discussing just before we started, like who is going to automate like their kitchen stove, like turning off and on, right? Like I don't want to accidentally burn my house down.
Exactly, especially if it's a gas stove.
All right, the next one and probably my favorite a little addition to Home Assistant 2024.11 is the LG ThinQ integration. Now I have been using the Hacks component by I believe it's Olio69 on GitHub, which was a reverse engineered smart ThinQ integration. So I had my LG fridge connected up through that. But my favorite part of this is that LG, and we talk about companies doing the opposite all the time, where they will pull devices out from people, remove API access. LG have actually come to the party this time and created an official Home Assistant integration for the LG ThinQ range of devices. This is like, I am really pleased that I've got an LG fridge, particularly a ThinQ fridge, just based on this, right? It's like the fact that LG have come to the party and said, you know what, we don't want people using hacked versions of our API or anything like that. Let's just create an official add-on. And it's got a whole bunch of devices, like I think probably more than the hacks component, at least I know there's, even on my fridge, I was like, oh, I didn't realize that sensor could be available. So kudos to LG for doing this, and kudos to Olo for creating the original hacks version of it. LG ThinQ now officially supported in-home assistant, no hacks required.
Is it a cloud API?
It is cloud still. It's definitely still cloud. So gonna take the win.
It's better than nothing, right? Exactly. I don't know. It's really nice to see actual, you know, manufacturers doing this and saying, hey, I'm gonna bring my API into Home Assistant, whatever.
Yeah.
And hopefully it's not a one-time operation. Hopefully they do update it as you know, new things come out or things get deprecated and so on and so forth. Hopefully that's kept up with. That is very cool. All right, Music Assistant. So finally lands as an official integration into Home Assistant. So now you can now integrate Home Assistant with Music Assistant without a custom hacks component. So all of this time you needed hacks to run Music Assistant. You don't need it to run in Music Assistant, but you needed to integrate with Home Assistant. So you kind of still needed it. And now because it's, I'm guessing it's also because it's been adopted by the Open Home Foundation, and it falls under the purview of, I might be getting it wrong. It's either Open Home Foundation or Nabucasa. So I believe it's the Open Home Foundation. Music Assistant. And so now because of that, they can also say, hey, let's just, you know, bring this in officially. We do plan to support this and so on and so forth. Right. So that's really nice to see.
All right. Breaking changes in 2024.11 HomeKit. So historically, a lot of integrations that implemented doorbells as binary sensors, and they had a device class for occupancy. This design, so of the device class being occupancy, was replaced with the new event entities, which used a purpose-built device class of doorbell. So there's now a new doorbell device that's available. HomeKit will no longer automatically link binary sensors with device class occupancy as a linked doorbell sensor. So linked doorbell sensors can continue to be configured manually via YAML. So if you do need the old doorbells type sensor, you can do that in YAML. It's not available in the UI, but yeah, that is a broken change for HomeKit there.
Also in NetAtmo, so the preset modules, So the preset modes of the thermostat have now been renamed so that they can support translations. So schedule, frost guard, and manual have now been renamed to lowercase schedule, frost underscore guard, and lowercase manual.
All right. Update entities. The state attributes of update entities have been changed. The in-progress state attribute is now always a Boolean, never an integer. And a new state attribute of update percentage has been added. The update percentage is a number between 0 and 100 if an update is in progress and the entity supports reporting the progress. Or the state would be none if an update is not in progress or an update is in progress but the entity does not support reporting progress. So, yeah, that's good.
Google domains Spider and Bloomsky are no longer available. So, not sure the reason why.
All those services gone. Yeah. Bye-bye.
Oh, yeah, I guess Google Domains itself is gone, right?
So, yeah, exactly. And I think the other ones have gone as well. Declined Google Calendar alerts or events, they will no longer be displayed in the calendar. So previously, if you had received an invite to an event on your Google Calendar and you declined it, it would still appear in the Home Assistant calendar. Those events, once you mark them as declined, will be removed from your UI copy of them in your Home Assistant instance.
Right. I think that's it for 2024 Dot 11. Just a couple of announcements. We just want to give a huge shout out to our new Patreon, Brian. Thank you for supporting us. And I think there's an update from Nick.
Yeah, so Nick from Slopes to Smart Homes, I think a few episodes ago, he had a great update. So Nick wrote into us saying, thanks for the podcast. I was able to get the full real-time feed from the marketing department. And it turns out it has everything I need. I have made my first custom component, and I've been asked to build a dashboard for our employee spaces. So if you didn't listen to the episode, Nick works during the winter up in the mountains doing as a ski instructor. So he spends a lot of time driving up in remote parts of the hills, up into the ski resort, where he's then got a locker room full of gadgets and sensors that he wants to be able to essentially pull into his home so he can say, hey, what's the ski conditions like today? And now he can pull that data down for the employees. Now, the best part Nick was able to do, I now have a full AI agent with real-time access to the info too. So thank you so much for the chance to talk about all this on the podcast. I'm glad something this nerdy and fun came out of it. I love this update because I know Nick was trying to get all these sensors from the resort itself. He wanted to know how much snow was up there and, just be able to show it in a real-time way for the other instructors to be able to go, cool, it's going to be a good day. Cool. And if you are interested, Nick has created a custom component so you can install it yourself and pull in the live feed from the ski resort if that's something you're interested in. We'll leave links in the show notes.
There you go. All right.
Yeah, love it.
That is 2024.11.
That's it. Ryan, I do have one more update for you.
Oh, I want to know.
So last episode, I talked about Matter.
Yep.
So I said I just got the little Miros presence sensor, and it was like magic. I hooked it up to my Amazon Echo. I got sick and tired of the Amazon Echo. I wanted to know the state of the device, right? And because I can't get that out of the Amazon Echo, right? Because it doesn't have a two-way API. It'll take the data from Home Assistant, but it won't bring the devices back into Home Assistant. So Nabucasa had obviously given Rohan and both, myself and Rohan, a Home Assistant Green. And as part of that, I can then access the add-on store. And as part of an official add-on is the Matter server. So I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go in and install it. So I installed the Matter server add-on. Seemed pretty basic. It's just install the add-on, gives you an IP address or whatever. And then I just unlinked the Miros device from the Amazon Echo, which then put it back into pairing mode. And then once it was in pairing mode, it was literally, I think, popped up in Home Assistant again, new device discovered, configured it, hit the OK button to say, yes, my Matter server is on this server and this IP address. And it's now in Home Assistant as a first-class entity. I can see all the attributes of the sensor. I do have to have the Home Assistant Green powered on, so I'm not using the Green for anything else at the moment apart from this Matter server and Music Assistant. I'll just need to move the Matter server to somewhere else if I want to not have to run the Green all the time. But the Green did replace another server that was running 24/7. It's probably drink up a lot more energy anyway. So I'll take that for what it is at the moment. But yeah, Matter, for something that's in beta and Matter being such a new protocol, I was really impressed with the way it's working and the way it is working with Home Assistant as well. I am certainly going to be looking for more Matter devices moving forward. I do think this is the future.
Interesting. Okay.
It just, seamlessly integrated, right? It's a shame that it's Wi-Fi based. I think it's Wi-Fi based. I don't know. It's still magic to me, right? I'm pretty sure that I had to give it Wi-Fi credentials that it is Wi-Fi based. So that does concern me a little bit, but the way it was a seamless experience to integrate, no cloud connections or anything that required, fantastic.
That's cool. Yeah. Would you move your existing instance into the Green?
Absolutely not. So
a lot of work.
Well, no, it's not that. Well, I mean, Home Assistant has the backups now, right? And yeah. I'm pretty thrifty moving files around. I'm not digging the green in any way, but I did find it a bit. So, some context: the server that the green replaced for me was just running Zwave.js, and that was it, 24/7. So I was like, I don't want to be wasting that server. That old computer, essentially, just for a Docker container. I've got the green. It's, you know, Raspberry Pi 4, essentially. It's going to be much cheaper to run. I downloaded the Zwave.js add-on. I moved all the Zwave.js files into the green, and it worked. I got it, you know, for the most part, it was fine. But eventually, I found that my Zwave network was constantly going offline, like just in Home Assistant, was being marked as unavailable. So I had my Home Assistant instance on one computer, and then it would over IP talk to the green, which was then running Zwave.js server over there. And yeah, I think even in the worst scenario, I think I exceeded. So I have an alert set up through Nabucasa every time my dishwasher sensor goes offline, which is a Zwave power monitor. So that was an alert to tell me that my Zwave network was down, right? I had exceeded the daily limit, which I think is pretty high. It's like 400 or 4,000 messages a day. I can't remember the exact number. I think it's more like 4,000, but I had exceeded my daily allotment of push notifications to my phone. The network was just constantly up and down that much. I originally thought maybe it's the USB stick, like the Zwave radio going, you know, maybe I just need to put an extension cord on it. Tried that. I thought, all right, maybe it's dying. I moved the Zwave.js Docker container off the green back onto the server where Home Assistant is, and the network has not gone down since. So I just think for my use, like for the fact that the green couldn't run just Zwave.js doesn't bode well for all of my automations, all right? And I do think having Zwave.js and Home Assistant on the one machine has its pros and cons. In my case, probably cons in that, you know, both of those things are probably heavy, you know, using up a lot of resources, right? So, yeah, I think for me, even like just running Music Assistant at the moment, I'm not sure if it's my Sonos speakers or if it's Music Assistant cutting out, you know, trying to stream the music around the Sonos speakers. But I will find a use case for the green. But it's at the moment, it's definitely not my mission critical stuff like the Zwave network or automations.
Okay, fair enough.
Have you found a use case for your green at all yet?
Yeah, I mean, I just use it because I have the green and the yellow, right? So I use the for any like kind of testing stuff. That way I have a little, I don't know, like a little lab set up there. And I use the yellow as my proper home assistant production instance. Yeah.
Cool. Well, that's it. That's there are updates. 2024.11. See you on the next one. Thanks for having
me. Cheers. Yeah.
If you want to share your home assistant journey or come on as a guest, reach out to us at feedback@hasspodcast.io. That's hasspodcast.io.
The Home Assistant Podcast is hosted by Phil Hawthorne and myself, Rohan Karamandi. For links to topics we discussed today, check out our show notes on hasspodcast.io.
percent of the workweek is spent communicating, typing, talking, and going back and forth on topics until everyone is on the same page. It's time for a change. It's time for Grammarly. Grammarly's AI ensures your team gets the point across the first time, eliminating misunderstandings and streamlining collaboration. It goes beyond basic grammar to help tailor writing to specific audiences, whether that means adding an executive summary, fine-tuning tone, or cutting out jargon in just one click. 4 out of 5 professionals say Grammarly's AI boosts buy-in and moves work forward. It integrates seamlessly with over 500,000 apps and websites, is implemented in days, and is IT approved. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who trust Grammarly to elevate their communication. Visit grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly, enterprise ready AI.